From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Donald Trump is not the only international leader to fire off angry tweets when the mood strikes him. Iran's Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has been firing off angry messages aimed at the U.S. and Trump on his Twitter feed and website, calling Trump unstable and psychotic, among other things. The fiery rhetoric comes days after Iran's latest round of mass protests and ahead of a deadline for Trump to decide on whether or not to fulfill one of his major foreign policy campaign promises to undo his predecessor's nuclear deal with Iran. But according to the Associated Press, Trump has privately decided to extend economic sanctions, which are part of the nuclear deal. My guest is Rahul Mahajan, author of Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, and The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. He also teaches sociology at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls, and he is the U.S. foreign policy and empire correspondent for Rising Up. Welcome to the program, Rahul.
Great to be back with you, Sonali.
So you and I are speaking on Thursday, the day before Trump is set to publicly unveil his decision on the Iran nuclear deal. Can you remind us what it was that he had promised during his campaign to his base that he would do on the Iran nuclear deal and why he was so against it?
I believe he said it was the worst deal ever. And he said many things. The most common thing he said was he was just going to terminate it. Sometimes he seemed to suggest that he would renegotiate it much more harshly and get better terms for the United States. Of course, at no time when he talked about the deal during the campaign or since has he evinced even the slightest knowledge of any of the provisions of the deal.
So this was one of the few things that he did say on foreign policy, in addition to, of course, saying that he would have known how to beat ISIS. Let's talk about what the Associated Press said was going to happen. According to leaked reports, the Associated Press reported that Trump was expected to extend relief from economic sanctions to Iran as part of the nuclear deal. As far as you can tell, does this mean that he is basically going to extend the nuclear deal?
Well, so, okay, it's really hard to read these tea leaves, and I'm not going to commit absolutely to anything. There are reports that all three of his major foreign policy advisors, Mattis, Tillerson, and McMaster, want to extend the Iran deal and extend the suspension of sanctions along with it. And there is, of course, the Associated Press report you mentioned. But we should also remember that especially in this administration, although even in the past, leaks have different purposes. Sometimes leaks are there to tell you what's going to happen and to cement the leaker's reputation as somebody who has knowledge. Sometimes leaks are meant to actually try to push the president or other principals to make a decision in a certain way. So it's entirely possible that Trump, who is, of course, every decision Trump makes this week is entirely conditioned by his reaction to Michael Wolff's book. And it's quite possible that he did this bizarre meeting on immigration where he tried to show that he was capable of, talking to people for an hour without drooling. But right now he may want to show that he is a strong, decisive leader and go against every advisor of his. It's entirely possible. I'm not even going to guess what's going to happen.
I'm glad you brought that up. The book by Michael Wolff, Fire and Fury, really seems to have gotten under Trump's skin. It's a best-selling book. And there is, unfortunately, of course, Trump tends to be his own worst enemy. Also, another thing that took place this week was the revelation that Trump may not have remembered all the words to the national anthem. Anyway, setting that aside, the issue of the Iran nuclear deal, if his own advisors might be the ones who are in favor of extending the deal, shouldn't it be made clear that this nuclear deal is really good for the U.S.? It's good for Iran, obviously, but it is really good for the U.S. too?
Yeah, absolutely. So the deal has a tremendous number of safeguards, extreme restrictions, provisions for intrusive monitoring. It's the most comprehensive arms monitoring agreement since since the weapons inspection regime on Iraq. And one big difference is that was not consensual. It was a Security Council resolution. Iraq was forced to accede to it and
Iran,
didn't
yeah.
always cooperate fully. This is a deal that Iran has consented to. And so far, according to every IAEA report, it is in fact complying. When there was a minor technical problem, for example, with Iran having more heavy water than the limit specified of 130 million tons in the agreement, Iran immediately made arrangements to ship excess heavy water to other countries. So the Iran, according to everything the IAEA has said, Iran is complying with all of these requirements, and it has been certified to be not enriching uranium beyond 3.67%, which is well short of the 95% needed for a bomb, to not be reprocessing plutonium, to not be trying to create heavy water reactors, to not be trying to bring advanced centrifuges online or exceed the number of centrifuges it's allowed to have, which is about 6,000. IAEA has said that it has slapped more than 2,000 IAEA seals on various kinds of equipment. So any attempt to actually break out of any of these measures will be instantly known to IAEA inspectors and reported on as such.
So the way you describe it, it sounds like the U.S. has very much cemented its supremacy over Iran's sovereignty on these issues. Rex Tillerson, our Secretary of State, said that he was working with members of Congress to amend the nuclear deal in order to resolve Trump's concerns. What are Trump's concerns?
Well, Trump's concerns are very vague and depend on who has been spouting talking points at him most recently. The biggest concern, and one that other right-wing ideologues have put forward, is that the deal is not permanent. I mean, a billion years from now, Iran may be able to develop a nuclear weapon, or even 15 years from now, which is in the context of the current political time horizon of the United States, roughly equivalent to a billion years. It's not permanent. After 15 years, Iran might be able to get back on the track that it was on before the deal. So that's one concern. And so Bob Corker, for example, is trying to get support for legislation that would make the deal permanent. Of course, that legislation will not be meaningful because this is an agreement between the so-called P5 plus one, the permanent Security Council members, and Germany and Iran. It's not simply a matter of U.S. domestic legislation. But so that's one concern. Another concern is that with the diplomatic back and forth that may be involved if the IAEA discovers that there may be clandestine activity going on at an undisclosed site. It could take several weeks. It could take 24 days before Iran is made to shut down any such activities. There are, of course, it's not a deal that allows complete instantaneous surveillance and control of every person, walking on every square foot of Iranian soil. But there is no country in the world that is going to make such a deal and then consensually and then try to enforce it internally.
So, in other words, the U.S. has basically managed to win over Iran's, and it really has succeeded in many ways humiliating Iran, which is if you were wanting to keep up with the project of American dominance internationally, this nuclear deal would be very much in line with that, wouldn't it?
Well, so you could see it that way. I hope that not too many Iranians are seeing it that way. It's partly because of long-standing leverage the United States has had over Iran. So ever since the hostage crisis, the United States froze Iranian assets. There have been other freezes since then, and so basically about $100 billion in Iranian overseas assets were freed as a result of the deal. Some of that went to pay off debts, but about half of that was available to Iran for future purchases. So they got something out of it. And it's also important to remember that both Ayatollah Khomeini and his successor Ali Khamenei have made statements saying that acquisition of a nuclear weapon is immoral. So it did not require Iran to go against the stated moral or ethical or political goals of the supreme leader. That said, yes, they agreed to what generally most countries would consider a fairly humiliating regime of monitoring and inspection, although I would have to say that it would be nice if the future of arms control involved all countries agreeing to similar
right.
levels of monitoring and inspection.
There was an interesting article in Newsweek by former foreign minister of Italy, Giulio Terzi, who said that we should link the, because of course Europe is involved in this too, that we should link the Iran nuclear deal to human rights in the wake of the mass arrests by the Iranian government when the protests took place. But certainly the U.S. and even to an extent Europe tends to betray their own stated adherence to human rights standards. So yeah, let's apply them all. Let's apply all these standards fairly.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would be nice if you could apply these standards to Iran and lots of other countries. But, you know, the decision was made by the Obama administration, most likely correctly, to limit the deal to things directly related to nuclear fuel reactors and potential weapons. They decided not to include, for example, Iran's heavy involvement in the Syrian war. They left that off the table because if they had put that on the table, there would have been no agreement. Now saying after the agreement has been concluded, let's add stuff into it, that is going to be seen as arbitrary, capricious, and humiliating by the Iranian government, and they're not going to accede to it. If you want to actually do something about this human rights situation in Iran or Iran's continuing involvement in the ongoing Syrian war, that's a matter for separate negotiations, not something that should be sort of piggybacked onto this deal.
So, Rahul, the U.S. nuclear deal, if Trump were to, the U.S.-Iran nuclear deal, if Trump were to on Friday extend that deal, do you think it would play well among his base, or this would be seen as something and noted by his base? I mean, I don't know how much attention the members of his hardcore base are really paying to foreign policy, but if Trump did essentially go against his own campaign promise, would he pay a political price?
Well, you know what? I think that Trump's base, not just Trump's base, but a considerably larger chunk of the American electorate does not care what happens in these countries, especially as long as whatever happens and whatever people are in those countries are kept far away from them. So if it becomes a matter of political sort of whipping up a political frenzy, and Trump wants to say those damn Iranians, we're going to get them this time, then his base will cheer wildly for that and excoriate anyone who's against it. If Trump extends the deal, it will go quietly and disappear into the night within a matter of hours. Except perhaps for the very hardline right wing, which doesn't really have that much support.
Well, speaking of Americans not caring what happens in other countries, I want to pivot quickly to Yemen for a few minutes near the end of our conversation. This is the poorest country in the Gulf Arab world, neighboring Saudi Arabia, and the site of a very brutal U.S.-backed Saudi war that has been getting very little attention. And the U.S. Proudly, the Department of Defense proudly announced on Wednesday that the U.S. airstrikes kill senior terrorists in Yemen, quote unquote. This is the headline, indicating not only is the U.S. directly bombing Yemen, but that it has actually killed a number of people that it identifies as, quote, senior terrorists. What does this mean for the way in which the Yemen war is playing out?
Honestly, it's still amazing. I mean, since we have been at perpetual war in the Middle East for 16 years now, it is true that there are some people in the national security establishment who understand something about these countries and what's going on and what's the politics, but you still, at the end of the day, see products like we're bombing terrorists. Well, which ones? Right now the United States is effectively, along with Saudi Arabia, is effectively on the side of Al-Qaeda in Yemen. So it
Wow.
is true that
Let's
they occasionally
reiterate that. The
bomb
US is
people.
effectively on the side of Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, it is true that they sometimes bomb Al-Qaeda militants and kill them, fine. But every time they bomb Houthis and kill them, and what they've killed, they claim hundreds in airstrikes over the past year of important militants. They are weakening them and strengthening Al-Qaeda in opposition to them. So honestly, they still, even though it's paradoxical, there are people who understand what they're doing, but still, as an organization, we don't know what the hell we're doing in our own intervention in Yemen. But it is for sure that we are supporting a Saudi-led coalition that is imposing a blockade. That right now, the war in Yemen has been, in terms of sort of overt violence, low level compared to Syria. Estimates range from maybe 10,000, maybe 15,000 people have been killed over the entire course of it. But since it's a poor country with a lot of people driven to the edge of subsistence by the war, and because there is now effectively a blockade going on in Houthi-controlled areas by the Saudi-led coalition, we have, at some estimates, 7 million or more people right on the edge, facing the potential for anything up to including extreme malnutrition and starvation. This could become a massive humanitarian crisis if the blockade is not called off permanently.
And meanwhile, Al Jazeera, by the way, which is one of the few good sources of news coming out of Yemen, is saying that its bureau in Yemen was forcibly closed. I don't know if you heard about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Saudis have been controlling information flow regarding this war for quite some time. So this is just, in general, we've seen in the whole region, we've seen that journalists are no longer have the freedom to actually go and find stories without having to worry constantly about not just censorship, but the loss of their lives. So, we're not getting very much good reporting from about what's going on in Yemen, and that's not likely to change. Even so, the broad contours of what's going on and of US complicity for it are readily evident.
Rahul, I want to thank you as always for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Rahul Mahajan is the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, and The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. He also teaches sociology at University of Wisconsin, River Falls, and he is the U.S. foreign policy and empire correspondent for our show. We've been discussing the Iran nuclear deal and the ongoing war in Yemen. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.